You are listening to the Anormocast.
When it comes to cams, nobody stays ahead of the curve like Black Diamond. And until their climber engineers get antsy again, they've settled on quite the quiver of active protection. On top of the heap are the ultralight Camelots, the lightest, baddest cams in the land. Then, the venerable C4s have been updated time and again to achieve near perfection in smooth handling and bomber security. And rumor has it that if you hold a red C4 up to the light of an Indian Creek blood moon and whisper, "Camelot, Camelot, Camelot," a sentient coyote will trot up and teach you how to ring lock at last. And finally, for the thin end of things, the SuperTech Z4s round out the rack all the way down to the wee little maybe I can fall but I don't really want to fall, probably will hold but let's not find out number zero. The bottom line is nobody researches, redesigns, and continues to improve their cams like Black Diamond. So go to blackdiamondequipment.com or your favorite local shop and reward yourself with a couple new units for the coming season. You deserve it.
In the south of France, there is legendary Grimpon, Le Verdon, Le Calanque, Seyouze. But there is also the legendary wind, Le Mistral. A strong, cold, nearly resistless wind that can drive the people mad, but create conditions parfaits pour escalade. One moment. Let me put down my baguette and my cigarette. Ah, ouais.
Now, La Sportiva has captured the masterly wind in a new shoe, the Mistral. Slightly downturned for precision, but also designed for performance and comfort. A sticky toe patch makes the Mistral an all-arounder for hooking and jamming alike. And let me tell you something, I have never slipped my feet into a more comfortable climbing shoe. Even performance snug, these things feel like stuffing your feet into a buttery croissant. So if you're looking for a light, comfortable all-arounder, ride like the wind to Sportiva.com or your local shop and try on a Mistral and see if you ever want to take it off. Butter optional.
We gotta get Listen, where are you playing in town? Are you playing here?
We're doing the Normo Dome, whatever it is. It's terrific.
Oh,
it's
yeah, big house. Place. That side of town. That's a big nice. Place. You sold
What's
it
that
out.
That's I'll see.
You really should.
The hell are you doing?
Couldn't sleep. I'm checking the ropes. There was a frayed end on your rope, and I'm cutting it out.
Good weather, bad weather. Now or later, anytime.
Today's show is brought to you by Black Diamond Equipment, La Sportiva, and with support from Maxim Ropes. Maxim has been keeping the Anormocast off the deck since 2012.
And now, we can also thank the chill folks at Yeti. And don't forget our charter sponsor, Bonfire Coffee. Go to bonfirecoffee.com and enter Normo at checkout to get a great deal on great coffee and to support the Anormocast.
And now, back to the show.
Hello and welcome to the Anormocast. This is your host, Chris Kaluse. It is March 20th, 2024, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon here in Colorado. And this is episode 282 of the Anormocast, a conversation with Natalia Grossman. And welcome to springtime. It is officially springtime. The equinox was some point in the last like 24 to 48 hours. And I'm psyched. I know we got a lot of winter climbers out there that like this podcast, and winter climbing is cool, but even the winter climbers once in a while like the sun warming their backs on some rocks. So welcome to it. Welcome to springtime. And yes, on today's show, we have Natalia Grossman, who primarily climbs indoors where it is always springtime, minus the rain, but sometimes with the swampy humidity, as the case may be. Yeah, Natalia Grossman on the show today. reaching across into that comp world. But I want it noted that this year, just a couple few episodes ago, we had the now past giant Rel Robbins. And the reason I want to point that out is just the variety you get here on the Enormacast. I mean, are there, you know, two climbers that have their tendrils connected by history, but maybe attitudes farther apart than someone like Natalia Grossman and Rel Robbins? I don't know. Maybe they're on the same plane of existence and I'm just looking at it wrong. But nevertheless, it's quite a variety here on the show. And I don't know. I guess I just want that in my personal file. I want HR to know about that. So I'm bringing it up. I don't really have any business, so I'll just take a moment to point out that the shop is still up. It did not crash my website as I expected when I put it up in the fall last year. I re-upped the merchandise. All I have over there is koozies and stickers, and you can actually get the stickers for free. I put a note on there. It's sort of a volunteer pay system. I'm just that kind of businessman. I give everything away for free, which is to say the shitty kind. Yeah, go over to enormacast.com, check out the shop if you want to support the podcast in some other way than just listening. There's the Bermuda Triangle koozies over there, as well as the stickers if you feel like paying for one. It's only a little, cover postage, printing, that kind of thing. And I usually sneak an extra one in there for you too. Have you guys that bought stickers noticed that? And koozies, you guys usually get a sticker too. I just give the stickers away anyway, I can't help it. All right, on to Natalia Grossman. As you guys are well aware, we don't talk to the comp climbers very much on the Enormacast, but I don't know why. As you recall, Yanya and I got along quite well last time we did this. I think it's last time. I might be forgetting some of this. So many of these climbers cross over so much to rock climbing, and I sometimes get them late in their career when things are winding down in the comp scene, but not Natalia. She's sort of the phenom in USA climbing, at least on the women's side. She's our current qualifier in the women's side for the Olympics for lead and bouldering. We also have a couple speed climbers that have qualified, Emma Hunt and Piper Kelly, for the speed side of things. But remember, this year, speed is a separate category, which is where it should be. Not just for the reasons we all bagged on last time, but because we can bring the best competitors for that discipline to the games now. And that did not happen last year, and I think it was a real kind of cruel maneuver as far as the speed climbers were concerned. So we'll get the best of the speed climbers this way. On the other side, lead and boulder are still combined. Natalia is qualified. She's headed there. But we caught her about a month ago, kind of in between period, getting ready for spring comps and then ramping up to the Olympics. It's a nice chat with a chill Natalia. We talk about how she's had to take it actually down a notch to get better, which is a fascinating, almost Taoist kind of way of doing things. She didn't frame it that way. I'm doing that because that's what I do, is put all sorts of intense meaning on everything. Incidentally, I've been trying the same method for about a decade and a half, and it's not working as well for me as it is for Natalia. But yeah, Natalia's trying to keep it cool, keep the intensity and the pressure at bay, and just get ready to, represent the entire country at the Olympics. No big deal. So let's check it out. Conversation with Olympic qualifier Natalia Grossman. Oh, and all you crusty bastards that listen to this thing, listen in. This is an education. It's good to hear from these kids, okay? She's like the best and the brightest we got out there. She deserves your attention. And so what does the next 6 months look like for you?
I'm going to be here in Salt Lake a bit, just living life. And then I'm going to go to Europe for about a month, I'm just going to be traveling for about a month. And then I'll be back in Salt Lake for a pretty long time. And then I'll do like a World Cup in Europe. So go out there again in June and then come back for a bit, a few weeks before heading to the games. So a lot of, I don't know, good chunks of like home time as well as travel time.
Yeah, what does that look like for you? You said the next month you're just, there. I mean, what does it look like for you when you're not sort of on a cycle towards a competition or I mean, how much climbing are you doing? How much chilling are you doing? What does chilling look like for you?
I guess like I'm training, following a training plan right now. And so, yeah, that typically looks like 5 days a week climbing. And then I started like my off the wall training in January. So I'm into that. And then, yeah, like during off season, I'll still like climb a lot just because I love climbing, but I'm not necessarily like doing any weight stuff or finger training or anything like that. And most of the sessions are kind of just like, oh, I feel like doing this today. Rather, like right now, I'm like, okay, I want to hit power once a week. I want to hit endurance once a week. Like I have certain goals. So it's like a little more structured, but it's still pretty loosely structured because I think I learned from last year that too much structure is not good for me.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that a little bit. What did that, how did that manifest itself? Structure and what it looked like, you know, it made you unhappier, made you perform less well.
I think I was really strict with my program. And so I was like, okay, like this is what I'm doing. Like I have to stick with this. Like I have to do this. It doesn't matter like how I feel. Like this is what I plan to do. So like this is what I'm going to do. And I'd say now I'm like, I listen to my body a lot more. I'm like, oh, like I feel tired. I'm just not going to push it. And that's okay. And I shouldn't feel bad about that. Or, you know, if other people are psyched to like keep climbing, but like, I feel like I'm kind of done just being like, oh, I'm doing what's best for me. Or maybe the other way around, like I'm really psyched one day and I want to keep climbing and other people are done. Like not letting other people like influence or other athletes who I'm like training close to or with sometimes affect my program. And yeah, I think last year I like making the Olympics was such a big goal of mine that I was like so focused on it that I felt like I had to do like everything. I'm like, I have to boulder, I have to rope climb, I have to do like strength endurance. And like, I would just try and do like everything every day. And that was just not sustainable long term. And yeah, I just wasn't psyched to go into the gym, like wasn't really that happy. Like being there was pretty like tired. Yeah, I was kind of just like overtraining, I'd say. And so being able to like take a step back now and like see that, I think is a good step. And to like have made these changes, you know, for the past while now, I've reduced my volume a lot and it's just got me a lot more psyched and I like see the gains and it just keeps things fun.
Well, at least you don't have to train speed climbing, right?
That is true. I haven't touched a speed wall since 2019.
Yeah, I don't think anybody, at least in your part of the competition scene, are super bummed about that. But as you're discovering this, right, like you are starting to reflect on how you're feeling and how you're performing, is that something that you discovered, or was it something that maybe your teammates or your coaches started to realize? Like, was this a revelation that you had on your own? Or was it something that some other people maybe noticed as well and kind of pushed you towards?
Yeah, I think working with my PT, he writes a lot of my, like, or he writes all my programs for like my off the wall, like training. And he's very into like the scientific side of things and just like which energy systems you should be taxing and whatnot. And like he definitely noticed, and then he started monitoring my workload after we kind of realized that there was this crash. Like I think I did a lot of reflecting at the end of the season and I was like, oh yeah, like that, what was I doing? And I like brought that concern up to him and he's like, yeah, I noticed just like your energy, like blah, blah, blah. Let's make changes. So we did. And he like started monitoring my workload. And like now we can like see, you know, there's a graph. And if you start getting too high, then it's good. But like you don't want to get too high. And it's like all scientific. And it's like you rate your day on a scale of 1 to 10. And then by the amount of time, like how long you were climbing, and it like produces this number. And it's a scale that's used across many different sports. But it's like you want to be between like 0.9 and like 1.1, 1.2. And if you're like, oh, like that week was pretty high, then it's a lot easier to like monitor it. And so that hopefully I like never get back into like that overtraining fatigued state. Cause if you're keeping track of it, it's a lot harder to get there.
So you use this really strict structure to get a little less structured. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't feel strict because it's just like it takes literally like 30 seconds, okay, not even cool. like 5 seconds. And you're like, oh yeah, I climbed for this long. And I'd say I felt like it was like a 7 or an 8.
Okay, good.
But more just like with my climbing, like doing what I want to do in the session and being like, okay, yeah, like I want to do a little bit of power and some comp boulders and just kind of going with the flow in that sense.
What's your downtime look like? What do you do? What do you do in your like non-climbing time?
Yeah.
I mean, you were going to school. Mm-hmm. That seems kind of frantic as well, loading that on to what you do is training, but what else do you do?
I mean, I loved school. I graduated like about a year ago, and then like last winter spring was like the first time I wasn't in school. And I think that's honestly what led to like the overtraining, is because I had all of this time all of a sudden that like I wasn't used to. So then in the fall, I like started taking some courses and things that I am passionate about, mainly like psychology, because that's what I got my degree in. And so, yeah, I was just like taking courses. You can get like a certificate and put it on a resume. And I just like learning. So that's something. I got really into reading. So I'd say like every week I kind of have a new book that I'm reading, all kinds of things, genres. And then like I'm currently like really into painting as well. So just like non-athletic activities that are like nice. And obviously just like hanging out with friends and family, I'd say it's like my biggest downtime activity.
I think I saw that you started climbing at 6 or so, super early. When did it kind of become, you know, this thing that you were pretty much dedicating, you know, most of your free time? Or, you know, when did it become so serious that you had coaches and you had schedules and you were in the gym basically all the time? About how old were you when that kind of happened, when it became like that instead of just a hobby or this fun thing you did? Or maybe you started at a birthday party like so many people did, or I'm not sure. But when was that transition? Or did you start at a birthday party, by the way?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I'd say maybe. So I was doing gymnastics when I first started climbing.
Right.
So maybe by like when I quit gymnastics and decided to just focus on climbing, that was probably like the first step, even though I didn't really realize it at the time. But yeah, I joined a climbing team and it was like a 2-hour drive away. And my parents were like, well, realistically, like you can't go to both, because some days I was going straight from one practice to the other and just like, you know, straight from school, then having like 5 to 6 hours of activities. There's no way I could do that now. I don't know how I had all this energy, I guess, to do everything. And like, I had to like sacrifice some like gymnastics competitions for climbing competitions and vice versa. So yeah, by joining this team, I think that was like the first step, because then not only was I committing, but like my parents were committing because they were driving me. And then, yeah, I was probably like 10 or 11. And then when I was 15 and I moved to Boulder, that was definitely for climbing. That was a really big step.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But why did it replace gymnastics, do you think? Like, what was the shift? What did you see in it that wasn't happening in gymnastics, or were you just better at it?
I think I really liked the community. It was a lot. I feel like climbing's grown so much now, but back then it was pretty small and it was just more welcoming. Yeah, I was better at it maybe, but I don't think that really influenced why I wanted to go that way. I think I liked a big reason I like climbing more than gymnastics is that every day is different. Like you can go into the gym and like do new climbs all the time. You can learn new movements all the time. And gymnastics was like always the same thing over and over again. So just having like that variety and a space to just try new things and like keep learning instead of like trying to perfect one thing definitely drew me in into climbing more. Yeah, I had friends who, you know, I saw once a year at nationals and it was all exciting. And yeah, I knew the people and it was easy just to like feel like I knew everyone and yeah, was supported.
Are you an only child? Do you have brothers and sisters?
I'm an only child.
Okay. Your parents seem to be like, I mean, as supportive as parents have ever been in the history of the world, basically, of someone who wanted to do something. And that's just, at a surface glance. So maybe fill that in. Tell me about the support of your folks and, you know, this willingness to drive you around and all at first, and then also seeming like they're probably monitoring pretty closely your mental health and your ability to do like a million things at once. And so tell me about your folks and how they fit into this, because it seems like they are the pillar kind of on which you're standing, you know?
Well, first off, like, I love my parents and they're like my best friends, and I feel really lucky to like have that relationship with them and to like have this support that, like, if I get last, they don't care. Like, they have no idea. That's how I used to feel. I was like, they have no idea like what climbing is. And like, sometimes it was frustrating because I'd be like, I wanted them to like be more involved. And it's not that they weren't involved. They were very involved in like supporting me, but like, they didn't know all the terminology. Or I come home and be like, I just did this. And they're like, that's awesome. But I'm like, but you don't even know what that
you know
means,
what that is.
You know?
I did this ridiculous mantle and I had to like, they're like,
exactly.
Oh, that's so awesome, honey.
Yeah. And so like, I remember the first time my dad was like, oh yeah, like the arete. And I was like, you know what an arete is? I like, it made me so happy. And so like, obviously now they like, I mean, they know a lot more because of me and whatnot, but like, they didn't know anything about climbing. So I think sometimes being around people who, you know, their parents like grew up, or when they were growing up, their parents were climbing, their parents have always climbed. I was like, oh, like, I wish my parents, you know, understood on that level. But I think now looking back, I'm very happy they didn't, because it allowed there to be like no pressure. I didn't feel like I had to do this for them or anything like that. And I grew up going to a Montessori school. I don't know if you know what that is, but my mom has worked at a Montessori school for like 30 years. And Maria Montessori, the founder, one of her sayings is to follow the child. And so that's literally what my parents did. They like wanted to do that the best that they could for me in like a reasonable regard, obviously. And yeah, I was like, I want to join this team, like it's the best one. And they're like, okay, like we'll drive once a week, because they weren't going to drive, you know, 4 hours get every practice. And that was more than enough for me. Like, I never expected them to do anything. And looking back now, I'm like, wow, I'm just really lucky that it was like their idea. You know, then I had the idea of like wanting to move to Boulder. Like, that'd just be so cool. Like, I wish I had like strong people to climb with. And they're like, why don't we? And I was like, what? Like, really? Like, you just want to go?
That's
and my
amazing.
Mom was like,
yeah, that's, I knew this part of the story, and that's truly amazing. And you have to kind of, yeah, keep going, because I want you to sort of fill it in. Yeah.
My mom was like, yeah, I mean, I can like find work there. And my dad has like worked from home my whole life. And so they were kind of like, yeah, like if you want to. And I was like, oh, but like my friends and blah, blah, blah. But it was like a good time, because I was just ending middle school. I had gone to the same school since I was 2 years old. So like for 13 years, I had gone to the same school. I had the same friends. And then all of my friends were going to go to like this private school in Santa Cruz. And I knew that like my family couldn't afford that. And like the only reason I could go to a Montessori school was because like my mom worked there. And so like tuition was practically free. And that was something that was really hard for me, because maybe I guess I've never really thought about it, but looking back, maybe that was like the one time where like they couldn't support me in like a decision. I don't want to go to a public high school in Santa Cruz. I mean, in Boulder, it's very different. Like the public high schools are great, but it's different in Santa Cruz. You know, you've got gangs and whatnot, and not the same vibe. And so it was just like a good time to move, I guess. Just have a change, make a change. And yeah, we ended up moving 6 months after the idea first came up, and then moved to Boulder and had to make sacrifices. Like, it wasn't easy. I think some people, I don't know, I remember reading comments on Instagram, like, she's so spoiled, like, her parents do anything. And I remember it was, like, during COVID, I got a moon board. And I was like, actually, like, I paid for that myself. I don't know. We don't need to get into that. But hate comments are not fun. Yeah. Anyways, where was I going with this?
Just talking about the sacrifice.
Yeah, sacrifices. So, like, mm-hmm. we were living in an apartment for the first time, which was definitely an interesting experience and, like, a challenge for all of us. And selling a car and things like that. Looking back, I'm just so lucky that my parents, like, wanted to support me that in that way at such a young age. Because, like, when you're 15, like, I don't know, I could say this one day and, like, have a completely different thought the next day. But they knew, I guess, that I was really serious about climbing. And so they wanted to do what they could and, like, provide the most that they could. And yeah, I joined Team ABC and was able to, I guess, pursue my climbing career, even if at the time I wasn't thinking, I mean, I don't even think the Olympics were a thing back then, but, like, I wasn't thinking, I want to be, like, a World Cup climber. I want to do this and that. I was just like, I want to make youth worlds. I want to win, or, like, not even win, because I had to compete with, like, people who I was just like, I'm never going to beat them. But I want to, like, podium or do well at nationals. And so I was trying to pursue that, which is very, like, outcome oriented looking at it now. But I feel like so many youth climbers look at it like that. Like, you have nationals. Now it's only once a year. So you're training all year for this one comp. And that's a lot of pressure for, and then, like, you're just devastated if it doesn't go well. Or I was.
You know, so there's this film that just came out, a Real Rock film, sort of mid-year Real Rock film, The Smile and Fight. You know, and that's kind of the theme, you know, that Natalia's, you know, it's like smiling all the time. And, you know, sitting here talking to you, it's like, yeah, your demeanor is just really pleasant, which is, you know, a little bit of a loaded word sometimes. And that's kind of what I'm getting at, is that somewhere in you, in this kid, you know, you're like, well, I just kind of wanted to climb more. But no, you were driven. You're continue to be really driven. You can't succeed at what you've done and are continuing to do if you're not inside somewhere, like, super driven. And so, you know, tell me a little bit about your, you know, you have a degree in psychology, right? Tell me a little bit about this sort of two sides to the coin of Natalia Grossman, this, like, seemingly very happy, fun, you know, I want to have fun climbing. That was a big theme in that movie. And yet somewhere in you is, you know, this flint, this steel that makes you put your path forward, you know. And even though that seemed casual, like, oh, mom, I want to move to Boulder, like, that's a big thought for a middle school kid to pull up your roots and go somewhere just to be a climber. So tell me a little bit about that balance. What do you think when you look at yourself, you know, how are those two sides mixed? Do you know what I'm getting at with this question?
Yeah, it's funny because I've never, like, explicitly thought about it like that.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. So that's cool. I think, honestly, going to Montessori school taught me to be very disciplined and fostered a lot of independence. And to this day, I am still very independent and I've always been that way. And then I think partnering that independence with gymnastics, which was a sport that you're chasing perfection, and it's a very, like, cutthroat sport, I was able to take what I learned from that sport and, like, apply it into climbing. But as a kid, even when I was 7, you know, I'd write my to-do list and I'd check things off. And I was very, I've always been an organized planner type person. And I've learned to take a step back from that because it was, like, a little too much. And then it would, like, cause stress if things weren't done. And I'm like, I don't need to do this today. It's fine. And same with gymnastics. I think it was, I mean, no such thing as, like, perfection. And so as a young kid, I was always striving for this thing that, like, didn't exist. Because, like, you can get a perfect 10 in gymnastics, but that just doesn't apply to life. Like, things will not be perfect. But yeah, I think I just had this, like, drive, I guess, to do everything that I was did and do to like the best of my abilities. Like, I never want to just do something like halfway. Like, I just feel like there's no point in doing something if I can't like fully be committed to it, whether that's school or climbing, relationships. I want to be like all in it, or yeah, I don't want to just be like in this limbo. What Smile and Fight more referred to was like at competitions, sometimes there will be times where I get so in my own head that like I forget to enjoy the moment. Especially that happened a lot in the past. So I think the smile means reminding myself to just enjoy the moment, be present, realize where I am. I'm climbing on at a World Cup. I'm climbing on the stage of climbing that I always wanted to as a kid. It doesn't matter how it goes. Like, it shouldn't matter. I shouldn't put all this pressure on it because like I'm already doing what I always wanted to do. But then I think the fight comes more naturally. Everyone who goes into a competition is gonna fight to some degree, but just like a reminder to, you know, fight, do my best. Yeah, be confident and have fun and enjoy it while I'm doing it. So I think that's kind of where that motto comes from.
Yeah, but it's hard to do, isn't it? It's probably pretty hard to do.
Well, especially like the atmosphere is so serious sometimes.
For sure.
So it's just hard to like be like, we're just doing what we like to do. And it's just like a competition. Like in the grand scheme of things, like this is not like going to make or break our entire life.
It's interesting you say that, because I had sort of a half-formed question here on this piece of paper about that very thing, because, you know, competition climbing, it's growing. They're you know, it's got to the Olympics last time. It's in the Olympics. It should stay there. They're trying to divide the medals up, all these things. In a nutshell, they want to be taken seriously. You know, they want to be taken as like, you know, quote unquote, a real sport that can hold up against all the traditional sports and not just a bunch of kids in a gym, you know, kind of a thing. And it's interesting how when I was watching that film, I know that's this push, like this is a serious sport with serious athletes. And yet here's this person who's also, I was wondering about that. So you kind of just answered that question before I asked it, of like, how do you keep having fun and taking it not seriously when the whole thing is getting bigger and bigger, you know, hopefully for them or on TV and some of the events from the Olympics. And it's just like, we want this to get so big. And then there's Natalia like, no, we want to just have a good time and keep it where it is. Or I don't know how you feel about that, but yeah, I thought I saw the dichotomy, and it's right in the title, you know, Smile and Fight as well. So it's kind of fascinating that you sort of see that too, this seriousness that you have to kind of like forget about when the moment comes to perform your best.
And I think it's easier for me to also remember. I mean, when I started climbing, like it wasn't an Olympic sport. There wasn't the recognition that there is today. So maybe it's easier for me to like find that other side versus kids who are growing up now in the sport and know it's an Olympic sport. Maybe they're going to have a completely different view. Like, I want to go to the Olympics for climbing, which for me, that was just never a thought that even crossed my mind until like 3 years ago. So it is interesting, I think, having it now be in the Olympics, because I think that could change some people's perspective.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have gymnastics to reference. You know, you were in gymnastics at a fairly competitive level, even if you thought it was just local. But I mean, that's the whole, the Olympics and gymnastics, it's kind of like all wrapped up together, because that's the one national stage. So I think we can get away from it changing the sport in a lot of ways. But let me ask you a couple questions about some of your competitors in a way. I mean, you just were talking about having parents who didn't know anything about climbing and you kind of wish they did. And then of course, one of your colleagues, competitors, probably friends, you know, is Brooke Rabatou. And of course, you know, both her parents were lifelong climbers, very famous climbers themselves. The whole family's in it. And so it's like, it's just interesting because you have these two people who are the best at the sport, you know, or nearly the best anyway, among the best, let's say that, who came from these two different backgrounds. So it's interesting how it shows either one can kind of work, so to speak. But as you're like looking at, you know, these competitors that are also friends or whatever, like, can you tell me anything about like lessons that you've learned from either literally talking and training with, you know, someone like Brooke, or observing Ashima. She was in the scene when you started. Like, what kind of lessons, as you became a competitor and you were on the stage with some of these people, can you point to anything that you were like, well, that person does it this way and I'm going to do that and it works, kind of a thing? Or just maybe a general feeling that some of these competitors give you that you've used to help your climbing.
A lot of like things I've learned are from just like training with her, not necessarily her as like a competitor, but just, you know, growing up when I moved to ABC, then like we would climb together a lot. And like during, I guess, like COVID year, like she was back in Boulder and we were just climbing together like every day, but like outdoors mainly. But then we started like climbing indoors a bit. It was very motivating and like inspiring for me to grow up, you know, having a friend who I idolized, which is also was interesting to like make that shift, because I feel like there's so many people who I grew up idolizing who I'm like now friends with. I'm like, oh yeah, like I have posters of you in my room or something. Just like different generations joining, but just like seeing the work that goes into it and like the dedication to the sport, being just surrounded by so many motivated people definitely made me a lot more motivated. And being on ABC, having like 10 girls my age, like I was training with my competitors every day. So it pushed me to like just become a better climber.
It's interesting your timeline. And I was thinking about this before we started, and then you've brought up COVID a few times, that year of that's like starting to become sort of blurry in our memories already. But it seemed to kind of fit almost well for you, because then your breakouts, you know, happened pretty soon after things started to open up. And so how, you know, tell me about that, how that did affect you. I mean, you were in Boulder at that time. It was 4 years ago. Were you still in high school, just out of high school? You know, how did it fit into your training, and did it actually help you? Because it seems like in some ways, you know, having nothing else to do but focus on stuff like that might have been helpful.
Yeah, so I had just started college in 2019, fall of 2019, and I started doing well at like the I think they were just called American Cup series at the time, then our nationals, and like I was so excited. That was like my first time really winning a big thing. I mean, I don't know. I was really excited, and I was excited for the opportunity to compete at World Cups, since like the last World Cup I had done had been in 2019, and I had been like one spot out of finals, and I just wanted to make that final so badly. And I think that definitely fueled the motivation. And then, yeah, really excited to like make the World Cup team for the first time, and then planning my trip to the first World Cup of the season. I remember I was in my dorm crying because I was like, I can't afford this. This is a lot of money to like go do this comp. It was like my first time like going to Europe for like 6 days or something. You know, I was funding myself for everything. And yeah, that was not a good time. And then like 2 days later, literally the world shut down. It's like, okay, we're going to postpone lead and speed nationals, and school is going to go on break for a bit. And so then, you know, we all know how like things ended up turning out, but like I just did online school, finished the rest of my semester, climbed outside every day from like April to August, 2 days on, 1 day off, outdoors with like Brooke. We'd go to like Clear Creek, we'd go to Rocky Mountain a ton. And then, yeah, I decided to like come out to Salt Lake for a week or two in August of 2020. And then I pretty much just like stayed out here. I like went home. I was like, I think I'm going to come back out here a little bit more. And then I was able to do all my classes online. So I ended up doing my second, third, and fourth year all online. And I did like summer classes every summer. And so I graduated a little bit early just because I like having that other other thing besides climbing. And so when we'd be traveling at the, like doing the World Cups in the summer, like I liked doing school and it was like a good distraction, especially in the summer. Like I would just take one or two classes. So it was like pretty chill and like not super stressful. Definitely still like a little stressful, but I think I was so used to that, that I really liked having that distraction. And yeah, then I came out, I had like a friend out here and like I ended up staying with the family. Like the mom was super nice. She was like, yeah, like if you want to come out to Salt Lake, like you can stay with us. And so I ended up living with their family. I was like, okay, yeah, like for 3 months until like team trials. And then I ended up living with them for like 2 years. And like now they're like my family. And it's so cool that like, I was just thinking about that the other day, how climbing has brought me so many connections. I have a whole community that I just wouldn't even know if I hadn't gotten into the sport. Yeah, I lived with them and now I'm like more independent. I love having like that family aspect. And so like, I still go see them all the time, but I'm not like living there. And yeah, COVID was just like, it allowed me to do school online and to like move and to like just try something new. I was able to climb more because like when I was in person, I was just like going to the gym for like 1 or 2 hours at the end of the day. And I was just climbing at the same gym, Movement Boulder, every single day because it was like the closest option. I would just moonboard every single day, which I think like was great for the short amount of time that it happened. But like that wouldn't have been sustainable long term. But it got me stronger. And I think it like built a good base, especially then like adding all the outdoor climbing that was like primarily crimpy onto that was just, yeah, more of a base. And then just, yeah, being in Salt Lake and having access to like more comp style thing, boulders and whatnot. Yeah, worked out well.
Yeah, I mean, I just was kind of noting that and how maybe it just worked out to be, you know, sort of making a good thing out of something that seemed kind of terrible at the time. And like I said, it lined up with a sort of breakout year following it. And it, you know, there's the film again, Smile and Fight, like it's a movie. And so there's this very tidy arc to it. You can create kind of the story you want with the right arc. And there's a line in there. It's like when you started, you know, you started winning and, you know, there's this line in there and it's just like, she came out of nowhere. And I was like, I don't know if she just like came out of nowhere, but let me ask you that a little bit. Like, what do you think the switch was like for you? Because the way they sort of portray it and even looking at it, I mean, your record, it was like, yeah, there was a switch thrown and you came on really, really strong. So did it have to do with this like period of kind of the COVID era and training, or what happened, do you think, in your mind or your body where that switch was thrown and you were suddenly kind of thrust into the limelight as the came out of nowhere phenom, if you will?
Yeah, it's interesting.
And is that really how it happened?
Because I don't feel like it's like completely real.
Right.
It was kind of like the year before COVID. I feel like I was improving. But yeah, like I said, like last World Cup of 2019, I was like one spot out of finals. I mean, I had never done the World Cup circuit until 2021. Never had the opportunity to because I hadn't qualified like on the U.S. side of things. But I remember after it was my last Youth Worlds and I had done pretty well. I was pretty happy like with my results. I had like made all the finals and won some medals. And I felt really burnt out though. And I was almost considering not competing in 2019, that fall. I had just started college as well. And I remember talking to Brooke and she was going to go to the first national cup of the season. And I was like, oh, like, I guess I'll just go because like I want to see her and like my other friends. And like, I won't really train for it. Like I'll just like moonboard and I'll just show up and I won't worry that like I didn't have all this comp style practice. And yeah, I ended up winning that, and that was then I was like, well, now I have to do the next one. And then ended up winning all the national cups in fall 2019, and then followed that up with nationals. So like it wasn't really out of nowhere. It's not like I came out of nowhere after COVID, but I think because there was this COVID break, then when I had the opportunity to like dedicate myself to one goal and be like, I want to be on that US team. I want to like become the best climber I can be. Then to show up and then maybe do the full, I had the opportunity to do the full circuit. It was like, oh yeah, it seemed like this person came out of nowhere. I feel like I can see both sides to cool. it.
Are you affiliated with Moonboard at all? Because you just coined an amazing catchphrase for them. just Moonboard and show up.
Yeah, you'll be ready.
They own that.
I don't know. I don't know if that would work still. I don't think that would work. I think the style has changed a lot in the past 4 years.
Okay.
But maybe Moonboard and show up would still work in the US, but not at a World Cup.
Not at a World Cup. It's too many blobs at a World Club. But yeah, that's I was just curious because they should make a t-shirt that says that. So maybe you get a little cut of that money. Well, it's interesting because, like I said, I was like, okay, this is a really neat arc that they've created, but who knows, you know, it's all like partial reality, partially what you were thinking about the time. But let me ask you about stress, because that's also part of this arc, is then all of a sudden, you know, at least the way they tell it, you were on top and therefore you were the target and it made it less fun, and all of which is certainly true to a certain extent. But let me ask you, we only got a few more minutes. So, you know, you're qualified for the Olympics. I've talked to other athletes about the Olympics who competed previously, and it's different. It's a bigger deal. You know, it's maybe a good strategy to try to think it's just one more comp and I'm just going to do what I do, where I go to the comps and I win or I do my best or whatever. But it's not just one more comp. It's the freaking Olympics. So I'm kind of asking, are you ready? Are you ready for, like, you know, there's going to be a ton of media attention. You've let me sneak in here at the very beginning before it gets rolling, which I appreciate. But are you ready for to be kind of a celebrity on a level that you maybe haven't been before? And I mean, I can't believe that actually I just talked to you about doing the podcast and I didn't have to go through like layers of people, of athlete managers and other people to get to you. I kind of did, but you know, you were responding. Other athletes that are at Olympic level, you know, you get responses from their publicists and things like that. So are you ready?
Well, it's funny the way you mentioned things, because I'm very much going with the approach of like, oh, it's just another competition. I think the pressure that film showed, that was immense pressure, which I luckily have not felt recently, because at that second like Salt Lake World Cup, I was like, if this is what every World Cup is going to be like, I cannot do this like for so many years. Like I just wasn't having fun at all, because I felt all this pressure to win. And I feel like now that I've lost, I don't feel that pressure to win. And it's just like a weight has been lifted. And so, yeah, I don't feel the pressure to win the Olympics at all. And so I don't even feel the pressure to podium or to make the final, because it's just like I've never been before. So maybe it's a different experience than like someone else who has been. But for me, it's all just new. And my goal was always just to make it. And like just to be a part of it and to be a part of that experience. And so for me, I'm like, it is just like another opportunity to climb. And yeah, I mean, it's easy to say that now, and maybe things will like change as we, you know, once we're actually on the plane, once we actually land and you have all this media. But I feel like even going to like the Pan Am Games was like a good experience, much smaller scale, but it was still like you're in an athlete village. There's like different teams. You're traveling with like Team USA. You're meeting other athletes in different sports at a smaller scale. Was definitely like a good experience. But yeah, I think I'm just so excited for the experience that it like takes some of the pressure off from like the competition itself. I mean, it's easy right now to just say things and maybe things will change, but that's like how I feel right now. I just don't think the person who wins the Olympics is necessarily the best climber, because it's just one day of climbing, you know? So like, you just never know what's going to happen. So why would I put all this pressure on it?
So this is primarily an outdoor climbing podcast. People who listen are fully aware that my comp climbing guests are scant in the lineup. I just go for the best, actually. If you look back at the comp climbers I interview, I only interview the best. So here you are.
I'm honored.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about outdoor climbing goals, you know, because that's what we like to talk about on here. Where does it fit in your life? And are you able to keep sort of outdoor climbing goals on hand when, you know, the pressure to train on plastic is so great?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things growing up with like parents who didn't climb was I didn't necessarily have like the exposure to outdoor climbing, but I think I went on my first like trip maybe when I was like 10, I'd say, went to Bishop. And then every like winter and like Thanksgiving break, we'd always try and go with like other families on the team. So that was really fun. But yeah, after like my last comp of the season this past year, I went to the Red River Gorge for the first time. And that was so fun. I was there for like 2 weeks and I am excited to go back. I'm like, I already know I want to go back. But yeah, I feel like I am more focused right now on like comps and whatnot. But I do know that I can do both. In the fall, I'm definitely excited to get back, especially since this was like my first time really like rope climbing outside. So I feel like I just have a lot to learn. And it was just really exciting to like be in a new environment because I bouldered a ton outside in the past, but not a ton of rope climbing. So I feel like there's room for growth.
All right, folks, thanks for listening. And thanks to Natalia for making that happen. And I mentioned in there that I didn't have to sort of go through anyone, a publicist or anybody like that. And that's not exactly true. Adam Peters over at Black Diamond helped me set that up. He's an old friend. Plus, you know, BD is a big sponsor of this show. But the cool thing was, is once he connected us, then it was Natalia. And I hit her up and she said, yeah, how about tomorrow night or something like that? It was like 24 or 48 hours difference between asking and having her on the screen. So I think that's just so cool. And I'm sure all these athletes wish that it was a better living than it is, at least here in the United States. And it's hopefully getting better. But I don't get the feeling that Natalia wishes she was a bigger deal than she is. And I mean, just think about it. If you run into her at the Red next fall, you can just say, hey, I'm sure. And just tell her that you think she's rad and maybe get a belay. Who knows? But that's the kind of people we're dealing with in climbing, and I still think that is so cool. And of course, you should follow Natalia on Instagram at the very least, Natalia_Grossman. Easy to find. Come on, you people know how to use the internet. But yeah, follow her because you know, you'll be tuned into what's going on with the Olympics at the very least. Plus, she's awesome, full of smiles, inspiration. It's what you want from social media. And she mentioned getting trolling on there. Like, what about this woman is worth trolling? Good God. If you spend 2 seconds of your lifetime trolling Natalia Grossman or anyone like her, you're a miserable piece of shit. Oh, my God. All right, anyway, the rest of us, we're going to go out and have a good time with our time because it's spring here in the Northern Hemisphere. And I know some folks listen down there in Australia. Guess what? It's fall for you guys. So everyone is winning. Everyone is winning the season. If you're not winning the season, you got to move somewhere else. Dust off those rock skills. Get out there. And of course, check your knots.
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Make work your favorite. That's your favorite, okay?
Okay.
Work is your new favorite.
Fine.